everybody. Happy New Year. Happy Christmas in the middle of that, of course, as well. Welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast. My name is Michael Bailey. We're here at Archant Towers. It is Monday, the 9th of January, 2017. It's 15:42 for those who like to be precise about these things. We apologise. It has been quite a long time. We've got loads to catch up with. And myself, Michael Bailey, I have sports desk Peter Raven. I don't know if I can still call you that now because you've got another new job, haven't you?
Two jobs since then.
Is this one your best job?
Yes.
You had to say that. Of course you did. You should have seen his face. I wish I'd taken a picture. And you heard him laughing there, I'm sure. Eastern Daily Press chief.
No. I was merely congratulating him. That's all I was doing.
Of course. It's, of course, Eastern Daily Press chief, Norwich City writer, Paddy Davitt. So, Pad, we've been here, there and everywhere. Actually, that's not true because I didn't go to Reading. But if you were to sum up Norwich City's festive period since the Huddersfield game, and you can take it to the Derby game if you want, what would you sum it up as? And you can only use a couple of words if you fancy.
Eventful.
Yeah.
That's all that needs to be said, my man. Yeah, to take it from the start of that timeline, desperate times. Neil sort it out, Delia sort it out. I'm referring to the Huddersfield game. From that, we've gone to Nelson Oliveira is the best thing since Cristiano Ronaldo, and they're still in the FA Cup fourth round draw. Happy days.
Happy days indeed, with a victory over Derby that certainly lightened the mood, didn't it, Pete? Which it needed to. At the start of a new year, a new beginning, new life.
Yeah, it's. I think the Derby result was unexpected from most, looking at what most people predicted before the game. Team that's in form and all the dramas that had been going on at Carrow Road in the month before that. It was a welcome result, but we're still now at that stage where we're mid-table and not in the top two where we're supposed to be. And you just wonder, we had that month of, the crowds turned and he surely got to go. And it's now, like you said, three wins, well, lost in the last three.
We're still one win in in about 12 games. Or something.
You could go and lose the next couple of league games and we'll be back to where we were at the Huddersfield game, but it's an interesting precipice at the moment.
Yeah, it's not one win in 12. I was a little bit harsh there, but maybe 3-12. We've got two elements, haven't we, Pad, to this, I guess. Just before we get stuck into the FA Cup game, the pressure on Alec Neil and the pressure on the Norwich City board. Although, I mean, I guess the board is probably intrinsically linked to what happened in the Saints game. So in terms of Alec Neil's position at the moment, is it sort of an uneasy truce or is it more than that at the moment?
Well, I mean, we have to ask the people who make these decisions, really. It's not really for us to sort of definitively say where he is now in terms of his Norwich life cycle. Reality is they've had to go deep into the well of public support for him. You know, we've had Jez Moxey come out. Prior to that, we had a few murmurings in newspaper interviews from the owners. So, and what we know ourselves without any public declarations that they believe he is the man to turn it round. So they've had to go out on a limb. I asked him directly. He said, yeah, it's quite embarrassing that they've had to come and do that because it reflects poorly on what he's not done and what his players have not done. So he's had to use up a lot of credit there. But ultimately, the last three games, you know, these things, it's always how far back do you go to pick out X amount of defeats or X amount of wins. I'm only going back three games and they're unbeaten in three games. So after what's gone before, that does feel like a move in the right direction. But as Pete rightly alludes, you go to Rotherham, you get done. Heaven forbid, Paul Lambert comes here with Wolves and they get done. I've already written off Southampton, so you can forget that. So, yeah, it might look slightly less gloomy as we sit here right now, but roll it on another week, 10 days, these same questions can be getting asked again. And ultimately, he's only got himself to blame because it's through him and through his players that they were in this situation. You know, to lose eight games in 10 that period before Christmas with that set of players, embarrassing. So, you know, they're basically reaping what they sow now. There's very little credit I sense with the supporters. You even saw it the first 10, 15 minutes against Derby. A few passes went astray. Naismith didn't look like he was too fussed. And you sense that was going to get quite ugly until Oliveira's moved centre stage. I think we're in that cycle now, particularly at home, that in these upcoming games, if they don't play very well, if they don't look like they're clicking, or heaven forbid they fall behind, I think we're going to be back to Huddersfield again.
Yeah, those first 10 minutes against Derby were truly awful. And they're definitely encouraging signs now over these last three games. But the wounds are deep. They're not going to be healed in a couple of games or what have you. I'd forgotten about the Jez Moxey interview. Yeah, that was over Christmas as well. That seemed to go down a bit of like a lead balloon in many ways, which obviously was not the intended consequence of it. The other, what we've got to get stuck into is the pressure on the board as well, which kind of manifested itself on Saturday with the FA Cup third round tie against Southampton, where we had 12,500 supporters, most of which probably staying away, the fans staying away in terms of the £25 ticket price, but not solely that. Would that be fair, Pete?
Yeah, it's, I think for me it's threefold. It's one, the obvious one, the price was far too high for an FA Cup game. Two, it's, I mean, my love for the FA Cup has died, and that's thanks to my team just not performing in it. I know Paddy still goes on past glories of Coventry, but and then the third, and then the third is, I think the I don't know, unease with the management team and the team. I mean, the three reasons that you can't just put it down just to the cost of the ticket. I know that's why the bulk stayed away, but there's more to it than just that, and it's just the, yeah, like I said, the unease of not wanting to watch this team. It's a bit different with league games because as a season ticket holder, you've already paid for the ticket, so you feel forced to go in a sense. But even the Derby game, on a few league games before there, there's quite a few empty seats around me, so it's people are drifting away just because they're not happy what they're seeing. And the point about Derby game is where they've been all season playing like that. It's like that performance for me was the best all season, but we just haven't seen enough of it. You just wonder what's going on there. But I wasn't expecting that many on Saturday. I was surprised it was 12,500.
Yeah, in a way.
But I mean, I don't know what the rules are, but kids for a quid, you get another, what, 5,000 or 6,000 there? People that don't get to see games normally.
I did see the rules. I think there is a minimum price. You can't set it below £10, but then you just set it £10. I mean, I think the point that I saw on Twitter, and I think I saw you mention on the Q&A pad, Norwich was the third most expensive game in terms of hosts in the third round of the FA Cup. Out of all of them, I think it was only Man United and Chelsea who charged more.
Well, I guess.
I mean, that's ridiculous, really.
12,500 people at £25 is... Yeah. That's still... They'd make the same amount of money had they charged full stadium at £12.
So. Just everyone's p***ed off this way.
Yeah. And again, it doesn't look great on TV when you've got empty stands as well.
Also,
how does a team motivate? It's a Norwich team that's been used to all these seasons coming out to a full house to suddenly see it half empty. How does that make them feel?
This is a major shift, isn't it? Because Norwich have always really, and apart from one incident where David McNally apologised for it afterwards at the AGM, I think, or whenever it was, they've always gone by the remit, we'll fill the ground because it'd be better to have a full stadium and we'll see if we can progress and we'll get more of the subsidiaries and what have you, sundries around having a full ground. If this is a conscious thing, like I say, Pete, well, it's the same amount of money, well, that's fine, but it's a shift then, isn't it, to just doing it by seeing who'll still pay the prices, which makes it a very different atmosphere. I mean, I've had it suggested to me that we don't know what the season ticket prices are for next year. It's not been confirmed or anything, but I've had it suggested to me that there would be a price increase. How would you feel about that as the only one who's a season ticket holder out of the three of us?
I was expecting a price freeze, to be honest.
You might still get one, let's be clear, I don't know, but
yeah, had we been like Newcastle or Brighton, it's like push forward for the Premier League, we need your help to get there, then fair enough. But where they are in the Championship, I'm not sure they can justify a price rise. I mean, we didn't get a discount when we went down, so why should we then get another increase for still being in the Championship? And if we do get promoted, then that should be a reward to the 20,000 season ticket holders that they haven't had to shell out any more money.
I think this subject will come up again and again, no doubt
also,
about it.
Am I right in thinking that Alex Neil said that £25 is too much?
He did. It was in the manager's presser, wasn't it? Paddy got asked that, and yeah, he seemed to agree with the situation.
He did. Obviously, he's got no say whatsoever in that aspect of the club policy, but he made the point straight after Christmas. A lot of expense, a lot of families, tough times, as we know, economically. I don't think he was trying to put himself offside with anybody who set those prices. He was just giving an honest answer. And on that point, we'll probably dig into the game, but I'm finding it a bit strange that some supporters now seem to take an issue with his honesty. We had it again with Closer and the naive comment. You know, what do you want from your manager? Do you want him to basically not tell you anything and not tell you what he thinks? So I'm finding that, and we're hearing it. But that might be just the disaffection with the man. You know, the majority, clearly we had large polls before Christmas and they all wanted him out, you know, rightly or wrongly. But I'm finding that aspect of this strange now. But then if they think he shouldn't be here, then they're not be predisposed towards him. But in terms of, they loved his honesty when he got here, and he's giving them honesty now, and for some reason he's getting...
Because he's singling players out, isn't he? I don't know if he did that when he first got here. It's like, fair enough that Closer was naive, but you tell him that in the dressing room, do you need to then tell everyone else?
He'd say he told him in the dressing room, so yeah, it doesn't matter that he said it in public.
Leave it as that, but...
But then, ultimately, they haven't done it for him for 2.5 months, have they? So what loyalty should he have to them?
Well, there's clearly an appetite, because we've got it at the moment. Norwich City are charging 33 quid for coach travel to Southampton, and the fans are going, well, that's a lot of money. Well, it was 33 quid to go to the Premier League game, and ultimately, it's the same journey. I know that it's one's a cup game and one's a Premier League game, but if that doesn't affect the coach, it's still the same.
If you're going to go to Southampton midweek for a cup replay that you're probably going to lose, you're always going to go whatever the price. That's not going to put people off.
Right, let's get stuck into the game then.
Fun boys.
Fun boys and girls. The game at Carrow Road, Norwich drew 2-2 in front of 12,500 people. And they came, the key point, I guess, Pat, is that they came from behind twice. I mean, Southampton scored a couple of decent goals. I think there were defensive issues from Norwich's part on both of them. But they did rally at the start of the second half and sort of midway through the first half, I thought, and towards the end. And that fighting spirit is nice in a game where probably they could have got away without really fighting too hard, to be honest, given maybe some people's reaction at the equaliser that went in at the end.
Who are you thinking about there, mate?
Just in general.
It's a long trip is all I'm going to say. Long trip for not a lot of success. But there you go. But
I remember saying that when everyone went to Goodison Park in the League Cup, and they brought back a win there.
They did. They did. Played well that night, actually. Wits played that day as well, so keep him in is what I say. But all joking aside, I think they were slightly... the facet you're alluding to about the fighting spirit, fine, but I think Southampton toyed with them for long spells, and if they'd have moved through the gears, we wouldn't be talking about a replay or about them hitting back. So, again, bit of context around that, really. I thought the gulf was painful between the two sets of players, and it wasn't even their front line, as it wasn't Norwich's front line players, admittedly, but the speed they moved the ball and the technical ability, midfield areas, it felt a long way from where Norwich are at the minute, sadly. But yeah, you know, ultimately that's all well and good, but it's 2-2, so fair play. You know, there was some positives, I thought, in terms of individual performances, and hopefully Close's injury isn't too bad, and it might prove to be another step in the right direction.
Yeah, he got a kick on the Achilles, and we'll come on to that maybe in a moment. Although it was interesting because Alec Neil said that Norwich equalised the first time around and then they sort of held back as if they didn't want to push on for another one, whereas to me that was not Norwich, that was Southampton going, oh hang on, we're now drawing where we should be out of sight here or whatever, because you're right, they did look pretty comfortable. Tim Close was off the pitch, as we've already touched on, injured. As they got their second goal, Southampton. I didn't actually see what happened. So I guess ultimately he shouldn't be rolling off the pitch. And he tried to run back on so he could run it off again. It's like, no, Tim, no. Achilles injury, by the way.
You don't see players these days rolling off a pitch, do you, to get treated? Even if they're right next to the touchline, it's... I know I've just said that he probably shouldn't have said it in public, but Alex Neil was spot on. It's naive. Especially from someone so experienced. Maybe if it was one of the under-18s he was in, fair enough, but he should have known better, I guess.
He's just got too good a character, hasn't he? That's the thing. I guess, you know, again, you play the first team players that you decide to risk. You run the risk then of them getting a knock. Martin Olsen pulled through, thankfully, of course. Robbie Brady is out suspended at the moment. I think he's got one more game of the suspension to go. Paddy's giving me a little nod there, so that's good. Should we just touch a little bit more on Stephen Whittaker? We'll hear from him in a moment, but I think we'd all kind of forgotten about him, haven't we? And now maybe we shouldn't forget about him?
Well, I mean, I think the reality is, in the right-back berth, there's only one man who's going to play if they're all fit and available, and that's Mr Pinto. So, and Neil's more or less confirmed that to be the case. So in that context, it's hard for Stephen Whittaker, because it's not like a central defender where there's two positions, or a central midfielder where there's two positions. He's basically got one position in that field that he can play realistically, and he's not going to get in if Pinto's fit. So tough for the lad, really. But he's a good professional, and he showed that. You know, he came in and involved in both of Norwich's goals. So, and he had to deal with a very tricky customer in Ryan Bertrand without a lot of, I didn't think, support from young Josh in front of him defensively. So all in all, I thought he had a decent game, and that's all he can do really, is just remind his manager, maybe remind us as well, that he's the sort of lads, they are the sort of lads you need in a squad, you know, who might not play too many games, but when they come in there isn't a noticeable drop in the levels, and you know, I think that he would fall into that category.
We'll have to see what Ivo's big news is, I suppose, before we judge whether he'll be available or not over the coming weeks. I'm sure he would. He said it was good news, so it must be. Let's hear from Stephen Whittaker, shall we?
First of all, to come from behind against a Premier League side in the FA Cup, that's a pretty good result in the end, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. You know, when it's always one goal in it, you're always in the game. We kept believing, and we managed to snatch a draw on a replay in the last minute.
And are you happy with the replay? Because I guess at a point where the league is a priority, do you really want another game?
Yeah, I suppose you can look upon it two ways. Personally for me, obviously I've not played a lot of games as I'd like to, so it's hopefully another game that I can be involved in and get some match time.
Yeah, it must have been good for you to see that you were playing this afternoon. It has been a while. How was it?
Yeah, it was fine. You know, I try and keep myself as good as I can during the week and training, work hard. And got a chance to play today and hopefully done myself justice.
And in terms of the penalty, did we know who was going to take the penalties before the game kicked off, or was that a decision made on the pitch?
It wasn't decided before. Normally strikers, you know, step up and hit the pens, but nobody was really forthcoming. Cameron was down,
so
won the penalty, and he was still on the ground, so I managed to get the ball and step up.
And you've taken a few in your time, haven't you, Rangers and what have you, so I guess you felt pretty confident beforehand.
Yeah, I might have had a few, like you say, in Scotland for Rangers. I think I hit one last season for against Everton in the Cup, managed to score that, so it's a situation that I quite enjoy, actually.
Take it all in your stride.
Yeah.
Well, there will be a replay coming up again. I'd say it's probably been a difficult season for you so far, hasn't it? How do you see it sort of going into the second half for you now, personally?
Yeah, I just need to keep working away. You know, chances, you know, they're few and far between at the minute, but the manager knows what I'm capable of. I'll keep working hard, and hopefully I'll get more chances to play in the second half of the season.
And in terms of the side, I'd say it's been a positive couple of games in the league, and this is a positive in the end as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, you know, the last three or four games we've done well. The results are starting to turn, and I think we just carry that momentum going forward.
Stephen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Pinkin.com podcast. Before we get back to the discussion, think you're the best at fantasy football? Do not wait until the end of the season to find out. Put your fantasy football knowledge to the test, people, and win cash every week at DraftKings.co.uk. Apparently, DraftKings is the world's number one destination for one-day fantasy football for cash. Now, you can go to DraftKings.co.uk/pink now to pick a team and enter this Saturday's contest for a shot at winning a share of $200, which I would imagine is probably worth more in terms of pounds now than when whoever wrote this down wrote it down. So get in there. That is the address, DraftKings.co.uk/pink to play free. I slated Stephen Naismith a little bit, as I mentioned, for his first 10 minutes against Derby. But since then, Pads, is he growing in influence? Are we starting to see a bit more from... I don't know, of course, we have to take into account this is January.
What do we mean by that?
Well, it's transfer window time, isn't it? And he came very close to leaving in August. I don't know, but obviously people will question it.
Yeah. Well, possibly. But it does seem... you know, I think I wrote somewhere, whisper it quietly, but he might be able to have an influence on this set of players. But it, you know, what's gone before would lead you to think that he's probably going to slip back again. But yeah, no, the last two or three games he was good against Derby after that initial 10-15 minute spell, as they all were, and he was good again on Saturday. So it would be nice to think that he might start delivering on a rather lavish transfer fee. But I have my doubts. But I think what I would say, he seems to be, he is better in that wider area of a three. I don't think he's your number 10. I don't think he's your man further forward, the striker. So if he's going to play him in that role. And obviously time will tell. Yeah, January will decide a lot about where Norwich's season is going, I think, in terms of players in, player out.
Yeah, I agree. I like him just on the left. I love how vocal he is as well. He's always shouting at his teammates in and out, you know, telling them where to go. They really like that. No, but it's good because it's funny how you can hear. I can hear from the press box what Stephen Naismith is saying, and it makes me think. Well, I never hear anyone really what they can say. And I know there are only 12,000 people there on Saturday, but it was nice to hear that. And you could do likewise against Derby too. Shall we touch on the transfer window? What a joyous thing the transfer window is. Pete, what would you like to see? Sat in the stands, what business do Norwich need to do?
Done early.
Whatever it is.
None of this wait until transfer window deadline day nonsense.
So, okay. Well, we are, this unnamed team, going to offer you 11 million quid for Robbie Brady if we can sort it out now. Yeah, is that right?
Driving there myself. And I'm awful behind the wheel. Yeah, I realise that... get the impression that Norwich have got to sell before they can buy.
They definitely have, yeah. That's not an impression. That is definitely true.
So wait until we sell Robbie Brady then before we can even talk about names. But
and also don't assume that you can then spend the all 11 million quid on your signings.
They'll get it at once. That's another thing. So, yeah, you'd want to see someone solid at the back, and I would have said another striker, but Oliveira is keeping Jerome out of the side. Yes. Do you want another one sat on the bench? Unless you're going to start playing 4-4-2, then Madison, I don't know what's happening with him, but I don't know enough about him to think if it's worth him coming back.
I can see him going back, and of course if Robbie Brady goes, given that Harry Toffolo has confirmed he's going to stay at Scunthorpe for the rest of the season, Pat, then left-sided defensive cover is a big thing.
All day long. I mean, obviously we had Closer hobbling off. If Martin Olsen had pulled up clutching his hamstring, you dread to think, if Brady's out the door at some point in the very near future. So yeah, that's a big area for me. Striker not so much, if they can keep Oliveira going and somehow get some confidence into Jerome, who looks bereft at the minute, then left back for me, I think. I can see Canos going now. I think the way the smoke signals are going, I think if they get what they paid for him, he'll be gone as well. So that's a few more quid for the pot. But as you rightly say, I don't think it's Alex Neil is handed 13 million. He goes and spends 30 million. I can quite conceivably see a rather championship-esque player or two arriving, then a Premier League loan, and that'll be a lot.
And that's just because of the shortfall from the money coming down and the wage bill that Norwich are currently propping up, which I would imagine is probably the highest in the Championship. Certainly it's not going to be far off Villa and Newcastle, if so. Sergi Canos, I know they need the money, but if they sell a player that they literally bought in August, what a waste of time. It doesn't say much for their recruitment policy, does it?
Or it shows you the situation with the finances, that, you know, in an ideal world, if you were cash rich, then you wouldn't entertain it, because it goes against this policy of buying young players and developing them. But clearly they aren't cash rich. So, as Neil said on Friday, every player that they get interest in, they will have to entertain it. It's not a case of, I only want to get rid of X or X and Y and I'll only entertain bids. If Sergi Canis is one of the few players they get bids for, I think his logic's sound. When he was brought in the summer, Josh and Jacob were still potential. Now Jacob Murphy has firmly grasped the nettle, and he has nailed down that right-hand side. And they've obviously signed a new deal, so I don't think we'll be seeing him depart for another window or two. In that environment, you've got Josh as his understudy. Where does Sergi Canos fit in? Where is he going to play in the next year or two? Norwich aren't in a situation of development now where they can park him for 5 years and wait until he blossoms in his early 20s. They can't do it. You know, they've gone down that route because they thought maybe Neil thought the Murphys weren't ready. This guy had a really good season on loan at Brentford, come through from Liverpool. He's got the pedigree. He's probably a little bit ahead of them. 6 months on, it's not happened. And it's Jacob Murphy who's moved way ahead of Sergi Canos. So to me, the logic is sound. If they get the money they want, sell him.
They say things move quite quickly in football. Thus it does. And we will be moving to Rotherham, obviously, before our trip to the South Coast for the FA Cup replay, pad. This is going to be quite exciting. Paul Warne, Norwich boy,
and physio, isn't he? Is he physio? Is that his task, his trade? No, conditioning. Yeah, that's right. He's in charge. He's their manager until they get a proper manager in. I don't even think he wanted the job, but he's got it. You've got it, Paul. And he'll be managing his, I guess, effectively his boyhood club, because I don't know. I played football with Paul Warren once. It's a bizarre experience. Yeah, all right. Well, he's in charge of Rotherham. Don't be so facetious. Tom Adeyemi is, of course, at Rotherham too, and Rotherham are rubbish this year.
Are they bottom?
Yes. Comfortably
bottom. So
they'll beat Oxford at home in the cup.
Under Paul Warren.
That's got to be 3 points, hasn't it? It's, if anything else, then it's a disaster.
Frank,
yeah.
The draw.
Agreed.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. If we're talking about another dropping of points after Rotherham, then I don't know where we go from there.
Boo! Well, St Mary's, we know that, Pad. That'll be exciting. And we'll see who Southampton can scrape together for a side, given how busy they are over these weeks. All right, then, we'll wrap that up. Thank you for being with us. We'll have a full year of podcasts ahead, of course. Pete's excited about that, I can tell.
Pumped.
Right, thanks for that. We will be at the New York Stadium. Hopefully, Lewis Grabham won't do anything untoward this time around. Seems unlikely. Pinken.com/live will be the live coverage, of course. Pinken.com for all the build-up and analysis before and after the game. Pad, Pete, thank you very much. Thanks all for listening. And we'll see you on the other side.